A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been doing the thing where you replace every object in your home with the version a factory would buy, and he's hit the vacuum cleaner. The heartbreak is specific. He bought a consumer vacuum right before the industrial epiphany landed, then found out a genuine Bosch industrial wet and dry machine would have cost him less. So now he's asking what's actually out there at the absurd end. What are the most overpowered, over-engineered, basically, never-die vacuum cleaners a person can buy from an industrial supplier? And he's got this image of himself wheeling an industrial workhorse around the apartment, never touching a flimsy stick vacuum again.
The image of Daniel in an apartment with a 35-liter wet and dry extractor on casters, vacuuming up a spilled bag of flour. That's the dream, and the dream is real. It just weighs 35 pounds and needs its filter cleaned monthly.
So before we go shopping, we need to understand what we're actually looking at.
It's doing three jobs at once, and most people only ever meet one of them. The consumer tier is Dyson, Shark, Miele. The commercial tier is what hotels and offices actually run, Pneumatic Henry, Sebo, some of the Kärcher range. And then there's the true industrial tier. Three-phase, explosion-proof, HEPA H14-rated machines that cost more than a used car. Daniel's enthusiasm sits somewhere between Tier 2 and Tier 3, and that's where the interesting stuff lives.
The thing that separates the tiers isn't suction. Consumer vacuums are marketed on suction numbers, air watts, cyclonic whatever. A Dyson V15 claims 230 air watts.
And an industrial machine doesn't brag about peak suction at all. It brags about running 8 hours a day for 10 years. The spec sheet is duty cycle, filtration class, continuous runtime. A consumer vacuum is designed for 20 minutes of cleaning, then back on the charger or into the cupboard. An industrial vacuum is designed for a shift. The motor is rated for continuous operation. The filter is a replaceable cartridge, and the whole thing is built so a maintenance tech can rebuild it in an hour.
So the question Daniel's actually asking is, what happens when you take that engineering philosophy and aim it at a two-bedroom apartment? And the answer is, you get machines that are absurd, and some of them cost less than the thing he already bought.
With that landscape in mind, let's go look at the machines that actually exist at the absurd end of this spectrum.
Start with the one that keeps showing up in contractor forums and on Hacker News, the Bosch Gas 35M AFC. This is a wet and dry extractor, 35 liters, and it's the machine that made Daniel's heartbreak make sense. It lists for less than a Dyson V15 detect.
And it's not a cheap version of a consumer vacuum. It's a different category of object. The Gas 35 is built to handle concrete dust and standing water on construction sites. It's got automatic filter cleaning, which means it pulses compressed air through the filter while it runs, so the suction never drops. That's the thing consumer vacuums can't do. A Dyson clogs, the suction falls off, you have to stop and shake the filter. The Bosch just keeps going.
The kicker is the noise. It's quieter than most consumer vacuums, and that's not because Bosch cares about your apartment. It's because construction sites in Europe have noise ordinances, and a machine that runs all day can't be howling at 80 decibels. So they engineered it quiet as a compliance requirement, and the side effect is that it's more pleasant to use than the thing marketed as a lifestyle product.
The ProSilence line specifically. That's the exception that proves the rule, because most industrial vacuums are loud. They're not designed for living spaces. But the ProSilence is, and that's the machine that straddles the line between commercial and industrial. It's still 30 pounds, it's still got a 35-liter tank, but it's quiet enough that you could run it in an apartment without the neighbors calling the police.
Then you escalate. The Kärcher NT9D10. This is a 10-kilowatt machine. Three-phase. It's not a vacuum cleaner, it's a stationary dust extraction unit on wheels. It's the thing a contractor wheels onto a site to clean up after demolition.
10 kilowatts. A Dyson pulls maybe 250 air watts at peak. This thing pulls 10,000 watts from a three-phase 400-volt supply. It's the difference between a bicycle and a freight train, and it's not subtle about it. The NT9110 is the size of a washing machine. It weighs hundreds of pounds and is designed to run continuously for hours while pulling concrete dust out of the air.
This is where the fantasy meets the apartment building. Because you can't plug a 10-kilowatt three-phase machine into a wall socket, residential homes don't have three-phase power. You'd need an electrician, a phase converter, or a commercial space. The machine is real, it's absurd, and it's completely unusable in a home.
But that's almost the point. Daniel said he wants something absurdly overpowered. The NT9110 is the platonic ideal of that. It's a machine that will never be underpowered because it's designed to do the work of 10 consumer vacuums simultaneously. It just happens to require infrastructure that doesn't exist in residential buildings.
Then there's the truly absurd end. Explosion-proof vacuums. ATEX Zone 1 rated. These are machines designed to vacuum explosive dust in chemical plants, grain silos, pharmaceutical facilities. They cost $10,000 and up. They have grounding systems, anti-static hoses, motors sealed against ignition, and they aren't sold to consumers.
The ATEX rating is the thing. Zone 1 means the atmosphere around the machine could be explosive at any time, so every component is engineered so it can't create a spark. The motor is sealed, the housing is conductive, the whole thing is grounded. It's the most over-engineered cleaning device on the planet, and it's meant for a room full of flower dust where one spark would level the building.
Flower dust. That's the thing people don't realize. Flour is explosive. A grain silo full of flour dust will detonate if you give it a spark. So the vacuum cleaner designed for that environment is a piece of safety equipment, not a cleaning tool. It's the absolute end of the spectrum, and it's hilarious to imagine one in an apartment.
It'd be the safest vacuum in the world. You could vacuum up a spilled bag of flour, and the machine would be rated to handle an atmosphere that's actively trying to kill you. But it costs as much as a used car, and you can't buy one without a commercial account and probably a safety inspection.
The Hacker News color on the consumer side is interesting because it reinforces the same point from the other direction. The Kirby Omega gets name-checked constantly in these threads. It's a metal-bodied door-to-door vacuum that weighs 25 pounds, is built like a tank, and owners keep them for 30 years. It's the opposite of the Dyson disposable philosophy.
Kirby is a fascinating company. They still sell door-to-door. The machines are all metal, the motors are rebuildable, and the design hasn't fundamentally changed in decades. People buy a Kirby, use it for 30 years, and pass it to their kids. And the Hacker News consensus is that Dyson sells marketing while Miele and Kirby sell engineering.
That's the distinction that drives the whole industrial comparison. Dyson is a marketing company that happens to make vacuums. The cyclonic separation is real engineering, but the machines are plastic, the batteries degrade, and the whole thing is designed to be replaced every few years. Miele sells a vacuum that's designed to be serviced. Kirby sells a vacuum that's designed to outlive you.
And the industrial tier just takes that philosophy to its logical conclusion. An industrial vacuum isn't designed to be replaced at all. It's designed to be rebuilt. The motor has replaceable carbon brushes. The seals are serviceable. The parts are available for 20-plus years. When it breaks, you fix it. You don't throw it away.
So Daniel's specific heartbreak is validated. A genuine Bosch industrial wet and dry vacuum, the Gas 35 class, lists for less than a Dyson V15 detect. And it comes with a 5-year warranty, replaceable parts, and a filter system that doesn't need replacing every 6 months.
The filter is the thing. Consumer vacuums have filters that are designed to be replaced. They're consumables. The Bosch has a filter that's designed to be cleaned by the machine itself while it runs. The automatic filter cleaning pulses compressed air through the cartridge, so the filter stays clear and the suction stays constant. You replace the filter eventually, but it's measured in years, not months.
So the machines are real, and some of them are cheaper than a Dyson. But here's where the fantasy meets the apartment building.
The power problem first. True industrial machines run on three-phase power. The car chair, NT9110, needs 400 volts, three-phase, which means an electrician, a phase converter, or a commercial space. You can't just plug it into the wall. The Bosch Gas 35 is single-phase, so it'll run on a standard outlet, which is part of why it's the sweet spot for home use. But once you go above about 3 kilowatts, you're in three-phase territory, and that's a hard blocker for residential.
The noise and size reality is the second collision. Even the quiet industrial machines are heavy. The Bosch Pro Silence is 30 plus pounds. The wet and dry glass runs 30 to 60 pounds. The stationary units are 200 pounds plus. Daniel's image of wheeling his industrial workhorse wherever stuff needs to be vacuumed collides with the fact that these machines live in workshops because they're too heavy to carry upstairs.
And the noise, except for the Pro Silence, is real. Industrial vacuums sit at 70 to 80 decibels. That's fine on a construction site. It's not fine in an apartment at 9 p.m. The Pro Silence is the exception because it was engineered for noise compliance, but most industrial machines don't care about your neighbors.
Then there's the maintenance flip. Industrial machines are designed to be serviced, not replaced. That's the core of their appeal. But it means you actually have to service them. Check the filter, empty the tank, replace the seals. A consumer vacuum is designed to be thrown away. An industrial vacuum is designed to be maintained. That's a lifestyle change, not just a purchase.
And it's the thing people miss when they romanticize industrial products. Yes, the machine will outlive you. But it'll outlive you because you replace the carbon brushes every few years and the power cord when it frays, and the seals when they dry out. If you don't do that maintenance, the machine dies just like a consumer vacuum. The difference is that the industrial machine gives you the option. The consumer machine doesn't.
The knock-on effect on the consumer products are overpriced. Thesis is where this gets nuanced. The Hacker News threads reveal that Dyson is overpriced for what it is, but Miele and Kirby are well-engineered consumer products. The industrial comparison isn't industrial beats consumer across the board. It's marketing-heavy consumer products lose to engineering. First products at every tier. The lesson isn't buy industrial, it's buy engineering.
That's the thing I keep wanting to underline. Daniel's instinct is right, but the conclusion isn't that industrial is always better. It's that there's a category of product that's designed to be maintained and repaired, and a category that's designed to be replaced. The industrial tier is just where that philosophy is most extreme. But Miele and Kirby live in the consumer tier, and they're built the same way.
The actual home use case, where industrial wins, is wet and dry capability. A Bosch Gas 35 will happily vacuum up a flooded basement, sawdust, or a spilled bag of flour. Things that would destroy Dyson. For apartment dwellers, the wet and dry class is the sweet spot. It replaces the vacuum, the carpet cleaner, and the shop vac in one machine.
That's the displacement Dana was talking about. One industrial machine replaces a whole cadre of consumer products. You don't need a separate carpet cleaner because the wet and dry extractor does it. You don't need a shop vac for the balcony because the Bosch does it. You don't need a handheld for the car because you wheel the Bosch out and it does it better.
The absurd end. The three-phase and explosion-proof machines. That's for people with workshops, not living rooms. But the wet and dry class is a better tool for a home than most consumer vacuums, if you can live with the weight and the maintenance.
So the honest trade-off summary is this. Daniel's dream machine is real. It costs less than a Dyson. It'll outlive him. But it's bigger, heavier, noisier, and it requires actual maintenance. The question isn't whether industrial is superior. It's whether you want a tool or an appliance.
An appliance is something you own until it breaks, then you replace it. A tool is something you own, maintain, and eventually pass on. The industrial vacuum is a tool. The Dyson is an appliance. And that distinction matters more than any spec sheet.
I think that's the thing Daniel is actually responding to. He's not just looking for a better vacuum. He's looking for a different relationship with the objects in his home. The IKEA boxes were the first step. The vacuum is the second. It's about owning things that are designed to be kept, not things that are designed to be replaced.
And the industrial tier is where that philosophy is most honest. These machines don't pretend to be anything other than what they are. They're heavy, they're loud, they need maintenance, and they'll run forever if you take care of them. The marketing is a spec sheet and a warranty. That's it.
Which is why the deadpan product descriptions in industrial catalogs are so appealing. McMaster Car doesn't try to sell you a lifestyle. It sells you a machine that does a job, and it tells you exactly what the machine can do, and that's the whole pitch.
There's a machine in the McMaster catalog. I don't remember the exact model, but the description is just a list of specifications. No adjectives, no aspirational language. Just, here's the motor, here's the tank, here's the filtration class, here's the duty cycle. And that's the most honest marketing I've ever seen.
Because the machine doesn't need marketing, it needs to be understood. The person buying it's going to run it 8 hours a day for 10 years. They need to know exactly what it can do, not how it'll make them feel.
So, Daniel's question, what are the most absurd and absurdly overpowered vacuum cleaners one can purchase? The answer is a spectrum. At the accessible end, the Bosch Gas 35M AFC, which is cheaper than a Dyson, quieter than a Dyson, and built to run all day on a construction site. At the absurd end, the Karcher NT9110, 10 kilowatts, 3-phase, a dust extraction unit on wheels. And at the hilarious end, ATEC Zone 1 explosion-proof vacuums that cost $10,000 and are designed to vacuum explosive dust in chemical plants.
The thing that connects all of them is the engineering philosophy. They're designed to be maintained, not replaced. The motors are rebuildable. The parts are available for decades. The manuals list recommended daily run times of 16 hours. They're tools, not appliances.
16 hours. That's the number that gets me. A consumer vacuum is designed for 20 minutes. An industrial vacuum is designed for 16 hours a day, every day, for years. The gap between those two numbers is the entire story.
You said the Bosch is quieter than a Dyson. That's the pro-silence line, and it's true for that one. The rest of them, no. I ran a carpet and upholstery cleaning business in the early 2000s, and my whole operation was built around a used Nilfisk GDV 2000. Bought it at auction for $400. It had already been running daily in a hotel for a decade. And it sounded like a jet engine spooling up. I wore ear protection even with the door closed.
The GDV 2000. That's a serious machine. Single phase, but it's a proper industrial extractor. And the noise, yeah, those Nilfisks weren't quiet. They were built for power, not for conversation.
I used it for 8 years. Sold it for $350. The buyer is still using it. And the reason I could sell it after 8 years is that I replaced the carbon brushes twice and the power cord once. Maintenance, I never have done on a consumer machine because you can't. The parts don't exist. The Nilfisk, I could order brushes from a supply house and have them in 2 days.
The maintenance point, from someone who actually did it. That's the thing that's hard to explain to people who've only owned consumer vacuums. The idea that you can replace a part and keep the machine running is foreign. They'd never had the option.
I still have the original manual. It lists a recommended daily runtime of 16 hours. My current Dyson doesn't have a manual. It has a QR code.
That's the whole thing in one sentence. A machine that comes with a maintenance schedule is a different category of object than one that comes with an app.
The Nilfisk manual is a booklet. It's got parts diagrams, torque specs, a troubleshooting section. The Dyson QR code takes you to a website that tells you to buy a new filter. That's the difference. One of them assumes you're going to fix it. The other assumes you're going to replace it.
The price reflects that assumption. The Nilfisk costs $400 used and sold for $350 after 8 years. The Dyson costs $600 new and is worth maybe $100 in 3 years. The industrial machine is cheaper over its lifetime because it's designed to have a lifetime.
That's the thing the QR code reveals. The Dyson isn't a tool, it's a subscription. You buy the machine, then you buy the filters, then you buy the batteries, and eventually you buy a new machine. The Nilfisk is a one-time purchase that you maintain. The total cost of ownership is completely different.
The manual also had a section on what to do if the motor overheats. You let it cool down, check the brushes, and keep going. The Dyson, if the motor overheats, you throw it away. That's the entire difference in one paragraph.
The manual detail is going to stick with me. Let's wrap this up.
The one thing I'd take from this is that the industrial versus consumer distinction is really a tool versus appliance distinction. A tool is designed to be maintained, repaired, and kept. An appliance is designed to be used until it breaks, then replaced. The industrial vacuum is a tool. The Dyson is an appliance. And once you see that, you can't unsee it.
The open question is where the bioengineering, not marketing principle, breaks down. Hilbert's Dyson has a QR code instead of a manual. Is that a sign of disposability, or just a sign that the product category has matured to the point where the manual is online? I don't know the answer, but the Bosch ProSilence is already straddling the line, marketing industrial machines to homes. And if manufacturers start chasing the home market, will they ruin what makes the industrial machines good?
That's the thing to watch. The pro-silence exists because Bosch saw home users buying industrial vacuums and decided to serve that market. If the marketing department gets involved, we might end up with industrial vacuums that are designed to be replaced, not maintained. The QR code comes for everything eventually.
Final image. Daniel in his apartment with a 35-liter wet and dry Bosch on wheels, vacuuming up a spilled bag of flour and never buying another vacuum again. The dream is real. It just weighs 35 pounds and needs its filter cleaned monthly.
He'll be the only person in Jerusalem whose vacuum cleaner has a parts diagram.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing. This has been My Weird Prompts. Email us at show@myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.